Everybody, welcome back to One Club Shorts podcast. Not a whole lot of golf to talk about, but we've got some fun stuff. I just came back from a great trip. We'll kind of hit on that. And then a couple news clips in there from the golf world. We'll talk about world ranking. We'll talk about some big news for us because we like this guy so much. He's starting his comeback tour in the next month. And we'll talk a little bit about Lexi and how she did in her first event competing against the men. So there's some cool things to talk about, but just not a lot of big stuff in the news just yet. With that being said, we'll dive into some college football and then circle back with the NFL and let Glenn and I fight it out for the Battle of New Jersey / New York in probably one of the most disgusting victories in the history of the Bills franchise.
Disgustingly sweet.
Just disgustingly disgusting is all I'm going to say. But let's start with golf. I mean, where do you want to start? You want to start with Lexi? You want to start with the return of the king or a little bit of data?
I want to start with the return of the king as long as the king you're talking about is Mr. Electric, Tom Kim.
That's not who I was thinking of, but let's go there. I love it.
So Tom Kim at 20 under par won the Shriners Children's Open this past weekend. Just a strong performance across the board. Positive strokes gained in every aspect except around the greens. But he was so good on approach, there wasn't much around the greens for him to be doing. It's easy to forget, Tom Kim is 21 years old, and he is a three-time winner on the PGA Tour, including back-to-back Shriners Children's Opens. Like, you know, people go crazy about young guys bursting onto the scene. You know, Ludvig Åberg was a big story in the Ryder Cup because, you know, hey, look, just last spring, this guy was playing in college. Tom Kim is like 3 or 2.5 years younger than him. Like Tom Kim was born in 2002. I don't want anyone to lose sight of this. Like this guy's a really good player. And, you know, as one of the guys that I pull for kind of as a meme, like every week, I have to shout out Tom Kim. I'd be remiss if I did not start off this episode with a nod to newly three-time PGA Tour winner Tom Kim,
the greatest off-season golfer of all time.
Hey, one of those wins is the Wyndham Championship, which means he has as many in-season wins as the guy that you thought I was about to talk about.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think it's incredibly impressive. Well, you know, 20 under is impressive regardless of where you do it or how you do it. But he's such a likable dude. I'm happy to see him win anytime, any place. But I would like him to see him at 21. He's got plenty of time to do it, but now it's time to see him transition this into some of these bigger events because he would be a great guy to get into the spotlight. I know Glenn talks about this a lot, where the sport needs those personalities to kind of carry the mantle. I think he could be one of those guys that is that international flag bearer that could really – take this sport to where you need it to be for, you know, a long time. If he could figure out how to be a top 10 golfer over the next 10, 15 years, he's just that kind of personality. I think it'd be great.
Yeah. Bro just needs to work on his celebration plans. You see, like, I'm going to eat a piece of chocolate, finish a piece of chocolate that I bought. Then I'm going back to the hotel room for room service. And then I'm going to sleep. 21 years old. You just want to like, $2 million, whatever the purse was, and you're going to finish a piece of chocolate that you bought earlier in the day and then go back to room service. Come on, Tom.
He's got Victor Hovland as his big brother teaching him how to.
And it's an especially tough look because they're in Vegas.
Yeah, you're in Vegas. Back to my room. I'm not going to put $100,000 on black at the roulette table, something, and just like throw down $100,000 on let's just go crazy on a hand of blackjack, you know, something fun, you know, go see Siegfried and Roy, something fun, you know.
I'm going to go 7 calories over my diet and then sleep 15 minutes longer than miss one of my workouts.
I do want to point out Tom Kim was tied for second at the British Open and tied for eighth at the US Open. This guy, let's not act like he hasn't shown up in the big time before.
No, but I think he's ready for sitting on that number one spot.
You know? Oh, I agree.
I think he's a fun guy to root for, and he's good for the sport. He's just got that. He's got one of those smiles, right? It just, yeah. It's hard. He's a hard person not to like. You know, I find Glenn sometimes, especially on weekends like last Sunday, is a hard person to like. I find Tom Kim is a hard person not, you know, to not root for. He's just total opposite of Glenn. If you look at the spectrum of life,
it goes Glenn to Tom Kim.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Tom Kim would have, Mr. Electric would have rubbed it in on you last week, though. And I didn't text anything. I stayed quiet.
Well, it's you're talking, I was. You know how tempting it was for me to text you wide right, and you miss that field goal.
That's
again.
Still too soon. That's,
and I was like, oh, there's too much time left. We're still behind. We won that game, that text was coming through.
Gracious in victory and defeat, as always, Craig. But let's get to what you really were calling the news of the week. On Monday, it was reported that Will Zalatoris will be making his return to professional golf in the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas beginning November 30th. It's been a while since we've seen Will Zalatoris. You know, we lamented his not being on either of the last two Ryder Cup teams. We have missed his weekly presence on the PGA Tour. We've been concerned about his health. Some videos came out of him hitting balls on the range. You know, his swing at 20%, I think, looks better than what any of our swings are ever going to look like. But he looks healthy. It looks good. It's exciting that he feels like he's in a place where he's ready to play professional competitive golf, or at least that he feels like he will be in 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah, he's a big one to get back healthy for the start of the season. So I'm glad that he's getting these tournaments in, you know, before the new year. So we can kind of figure out what he's missing and what he needs to work on over, you know, the dead of winter. But man, how great would it be to see a good, healthy Will Zalatoris come, you know, February, March, timeline, and just kind of hit the season running. You know, he just hit such a streak of bad luck, between, you know, having the yips for a little bit and figuring that out, and then just getting over the hill for a, if he's going to win a big tournament or not, and just all these things coming down on him. Just when you think he's starting to turn around, he throws his back out, or, you know, not throws his back, or hurts his back. But man, he just, I don't know. I'm rooting for the guy. I'm hoping that he comes back full strength.
I just hope he spent some of the last 6 months working on that putting stroke. You know, long putter,
broomstick,
cross-handed, split hand, side saddle. There's a million ways to do it, Will. You just got to find one. The dude has got to get away from that. Like, what was
and that's coming from a guy who has 13 different grips during one round.
Hey, it's five. I stand over the putt.
Do you actually have five different grips in play for putting in any given round?
I go standard.
Okay.
Cross hand. Saw. Split hand. And then I'll do one where my only like two fingers of my left hand are on the grip, and they're the last two are off of it. And I don't decide until I stand over the putt which one I'm using.
So it's just all vibes.
Yeah. Yeah.
At one point, I thought he was practicing sign language, and I thought he was joking. So I came behind him, and that wasn't the case. He was just trying to putt, but his hands were all over the place doing things.
I glitch. I'm like, before I put it down, like, so, oh, no, split, no, no this
but
way.
But in fairness, that was when Glenn was in his slump, and he was trying to figure stuff out. When he's playing well, he doesn't do that.
I still do it, even though I started to play well. Maybe that's why I'm like not making a lot of putts.
I get, like, what I'm – I started to think through is like long putts and short putts, having different grips, and like, all right, if you're like 15 feet or more and you need to whack it to, you know, get it through the rough or do something, you know, if you're off the green, different putting stroke. I'm trying to figure that part out. So I get that side of it, but
that's what was always so enticing about the anchored putters was it felt like you're just automatic on short putts, which I could really use because I don't know that you would call what I have the yips because it's probably a lack of skill and talent as well. But I'm searching for something that gets me confident over putts that I ought to be making, and I haven't found it yet. So maybe it's five different grips. Maybe that's the secret sauce.
You should try pickleball.
That's cure your yips.
It'll definitely help your putting yips.
I'm the opposite of most golfers. Like, I'm conventional in short, and I saw on long putts because I feel yippy on long putts. But I tried years ago. I tried the broomstick anchoring, and it felt like cheating. Like, I took one out, and you just kind of make everything. It's just, you know, once you take one hand out and you anchor it, all you're really doing is guiding the shaft back and through, and it just becomes so easy to do. I can see why they outlawed that, but I don't know. Did they really? Because, you know, Stuart Hagstad and Bernard Langer, they still look like I know they're not anchoring the club to their chest, but they're like anchoring their wrist to their chest. Like, what's the difference?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I guess you have to draw the line somewhere, but it does feel like it's certainly outside the spirit of the rule to still be doing that. Have either of you tried like the arm lock or anything like that? Post-anchor band?
I can't do that. I've tried that I don't know if I'm doing it wrong, but the angle of the putter, it's so, you know, the shaft is so lean toward the hole. I can't do it.
I did, Glenn and I did this Nike outing a couple years ago, and they gave us this, this like long shaft, but it wasn't like an anchor shaft. Glenn, what was that? Probably a 3/4 shaft. It's like
it was almost like a belly
shaft. And I used that for a little while. It was okay, but it gets funky where if you start to lose it, you feel like you're now just have a long shaft and you're just starting to like separate your grip so much to make sure that you get straight forward, straight back, that you're like, I just go back to my normal putter. I don't know what I'm doing. So it's great when it's working and you get in a groove with it. But like anything else, when you start to lose it, you quickly want to revert back to what you're comfortable with and it goes away. But no, I've never tried the arm lock. I feel like that's too hokey for me. I wouldn't be consistent enough with it.
So we'll see which one Will Zalatoris goes with when he comes back. I think that's where we started on this.
What's Bryson do? The arm lock?
I don't know. I don't get the CW, so I can't watch.
I'm right on live. Yeah, I know he rested up his forearm, right?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I think Kuchar does that too. Doesn't really like lock it with his arm. He sort of just rests it on his forearm and keeps it together.
I thought it was interesting how after the anchoring ban, some guys were like, you know, you have the Longers and the Kuchars of the world who were using the broomsticks or the belly putters, and their choice was clearly like, okay, I'm just going to do the most similar thing to what I was doing. But like, isn't Adam Scott using like a conventional short blade putter now? And he was like one of the poster people for the broomstick.
Yeah,
I thought it was interesting the way that people just kind of dove in different directions after the ban.
I know he switched from a Scotty Cameron broomstick to a Lab, the Mez broomstick, but I haven't seen him since. Like, I think he's still using the Lab, which is but I don't think he anchors it. Last time I saw him, he might have changed. He hasn't been on. I don't know if he's played well enough to be on camera in the last, you know, 4 months ago or so.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, it looks like he's still with the long Lab putter. I must be thinking of someone else. Oh, he was experimenting with a short putter, they said, a couple years ago, and has done so a few times post ban. I can't imagine I'd want to go back either after that.
The non-ban ban?
I don't want to go back to my conventional short putter just the next time I play golf.
Those lab putters are interesting. They're pretty hot right now. They have some weird designs, but I got to use some the other day. They are solid. They the hard part is you got to really get fitted for them to truly get the best out of it that they can. But you can literally hold it on your two fingers and it stays 100% level. Where wow. the rest it will kind of roll and be weighted, you know, like any other putter you have will just, you know, kind of teeter a little bit.
Yeah, they're fairly face balanced, right?
Yeah, they're great. I mean, they it takes a little bit to get used to and start trusting it, but man, they're pretty cool once you get fitted for one that you like.
Yeah, I want to try those because I'm a straight back, straight through, and center shafted putter that I've used all year for the first time ever. I think I had the same putter in the bag all year. So the lab that design that would work for me. I'm kind of curious to try it. I would even try the broomstick just to give it a shot.
I'm going to try like putting with my hybrid or something. I need to do like whatever is the farthest thing from the way I'm putting now is what I need to try, I think, because I do not have the answers.
So it's funny. Speaking of that, I just got back from a great trip in South Carolina. We did I was part of a trip called the Busch Cup, and it's the cadets from the U.S. Army team versus this year was against Georgia Southern, and it was great. It was they do a practice round one day, and then they do an alternate shot, and then they do a singles match after, and they combine the points. And every year the cadets go around, they play different teams, and this year it was at Congaree, and it was we had the luxury of getting to play there as well, and. Man, you talk about it. It was a fantastic course. It was just such a cool layout. The course could go back as far as, I think the cadets played it at 7,800 yards, but it could go back as far as 8,000, if they wanted to, but there was just so much sand. I mean, like it just, we were talking before the podcast started, and I just think it's a cool conversation when you come from up north and you play some of these courses down south, there's a good five or six shots that you just don't ever get to use or don't know how to hit until you get down there. It's the sand is different. It's fluffier. So you can't hit it like you normally do. You almost have to either pick it clean or change the way you have it in your stance. When you have all the stuff that we were hitting out of the waste hazard, it just grabs your club and it comes off differently. The grass itself is a little bit fluffier and the layout is different. You can't just take your 60 degree when it's in the rough and swing away at it. It's just, it's a different look and feel. Will, to your point, I was using anything off the rough a lot of times. I was grabbing my hybrid and choking down and using that as a putter to get it like center of the green a lot of times just to, you know, play it safe and make sure that, you know, if I was a little worried about chipping it off like a weird lie or off like over like a large extended green or whatever it was. There's just so many different shots you don't know or you don't get to ever practice up here. It's impossible to practice because you don't ever get to see it unless you're actually down there. But it's awesome. I mean, I think that's one of the coolest things about traveling and playing golf is seeing these different kind of layouts and trying to figure out how to, you know, hone up your game really quickly without having the experience of hitting off these different lies and different exposures and all this different stuff. But man, what a great trip. So it was really well done. It was a lot of fun. Georgia Southern pulled out the win. So they held the cup for this year, and then we'll see who the cadets play next year. But it was great. It was a great experience. And the kids loved it. It was good competitive golf, man. These kids can swing the club. They hit the ball so far. It was just fun to watch.
Do you feel like you came back with any new shots in the bag?
Well, yes and no, but I wouldn't get to use them again until I
That's fair.
Down south. Like I would never use them in like the shots that I figured out on day two. I don't think I'd try up here. I wouldn't need them. But I'd be more comfortable going down and playing there again and you know, trying if I got stuck in those situations again, but it was fun. It was a blast. And, you know, Glenn, it's kind of what we see at Pinehurst a little bit, but this was actually to more of an extreme. It was so much of it. It almost seemed like what the pictures of Tobacco Road looks like. In that sense, it's like, you know, miles and miles of sand sometimes. So if you're driving the right spot, man, you're just, you know, hitting and praying sometimes. But it's a blast. I'd love to see the different architecture, different layouts, getting, you know, put in spots where you just normally don't have to deal with that kind of stuff. But it was great. Fun trip all around.
Where is that?
Awesome.
Congress in South Carolina. So it's about 45 minutes north of Charleston and Savannah.
Okay, so it's by the water.
Yeah, no, it's more inland. It's really in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, so many great courses down that area. Like you said, like so far, like with Bermuda, I assume it's Bermuda grass where you can get. It's like not as dense as bent, but it's got this big root system. So if you hit the ground before the ball, it just kind of explodes. And it's not like bent. Bent, you can kind of go out. It's dense. It's compacted. The soil is compacted more underneath because the roots are not as quite as complex as Bermuda. So you can really like dig down and bent, like, you know, what we're used to up here in the Northeast. But down there, it's like you said, Craig, like it's so hard to get used to. It's sticky and it chunks out. And you really got to, you know, like I said, you got to go down. You got to have five shots around the green. You got to be able to confidently like get your right shoulder through the chips to get through them, or like little bumps with a hybrid or a fairway wood. I know when we go to Pinehurst, we just end up putting a lot from off the green.
Yeah. I mean, this like you'd be like 40 yards off and you're in kind of sand. It's kind of waste area, but it's like, so it's a little bit fluffy, but not really fluffy. But if you don't want to take any with it because it's just not going to go. And it's just a weird setup. So I was like, I don't know. Do I try and pitch this thing and pitch it clean? Do I take more club? Like, there was a lot to think about. And I just didn't, you know, have the experience to figure it out on the fly. So if I hit it well, I got lucky. If not, I ended up 15 feet in front of myself and, you know, just trying to figure out the next shot. But it was great. I had a blast. Company was awesome. Watching the cadets and the Jordan Southern kids play were great. And Congaree was just awesome. Food, the accommodation. They have cottages laid throughout. So it's like four-person cottages, and then they have some bigger ones, I think it slept up to 8 to 10 people all on the property. It was great. Really cool place.
Sounds pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Golf in that part of the country is a lot of fun. You know, to your point about Congaree, Tobacco Road, Pinehurst in North Carolina, you know, the Ocean Course has some of those vibes, but it also has the vibes of like Pete Dye just taking bulldozers and shovels and making whatever he wanted to make. It's such an interesting between the grass, the landscapes, the weather. And then I don't know, there's just like a different golf course architecture, like ethos there where like the Northeast Country Club is one thing. The, you know, Southern Championship Course is another thing. It's just an interesting and fun style of golf to get to be able to play. So that I'm sure was a great time.
Yeah, good trip. Highly recommend it.
So noted.
You gotta know somebody to get on, but
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like when someone recommends that you go to the Masters, it's like thanks. Yeah. Really appreciate that.
I also suggest you invest in Apple stock in 1982.
Yeah. Great advice. Really appreciate it. You wanna talk a little football?
Let's do it. Start with some college.
Where do you want to start? You want to start with Michigan was down early.
Yeah. I mean, look, I had an interesting conversation with some Michigan fans this weekend. I was with some Michigan alum, and I said, all right, flat out, how do you break down this team? You know, people are saying it's one of the best Michigan teams you've seen, they've seen in a long time. But I said, but how do you really judge that? Like, you haven't really played anybody yet, And they said, well, to be honest, when they were – some of the teams they played, and at the time that they played them, they were higher ranked than what they are now. But you're right, they haven't really played anyone yet. Penn State's going to be the first real test, and Penn State is no joke right now. Like they are a legit top 10 team, and maybe better than possibly Michigan and Ohio State at the end of the day if you catch them in the right streak. He's like, but with that being said, offensive line, all returning players, studs, right? Running backs, two of the best in the nation, definitely one of the best in the nation. Second one's, a great secondary running back. Quarterback, considered, one of the top five in the country right now. Receivers, okay, not at the caliber of Ohio State or some of the other teams, but all around offense, pretty darn good. Defense in the same light, right? You got your D-line is awesome. Linebackers are good and stable. In your D-backs, you've got two studs and two good, stable guys. He's like, so all in all, he's like, they feel like they can play with anybody. And this year of all the years, which I do highly agree with, I don't think there's anybody running away with it, right? I think in past years, there's been that Alabama, Georgia, whoever, that are just like, all right, there's them and there's everybody else. Like, who's fighting for second place? Maybe a TCU or Michigan or Ohio State or somebody comes out of nowhere and gives them a little bit of a fight for a half. But at the end of the day, it's really not much of a competition. I don't think that's the case this year. I really think there's probably, when you come down to it, there's probably six or seven teams that could go into the playoffs. And you probably wouldn't be surprised at the end of the year if any one of them walked away with a national championship if you got them on the right day playing hot, whatever. And you can throw Notre Dame in that mix. You could throw USC in that mix. Like, there's a lot of teams that, if they're playing well, they could definitely upset some good folks and whatever. And there's some teams in there that look great right now that – a couple bad series and they just aren't good enough to make up for the fact that they don't have the firepower that some of these other teams in the past have had to run away with some of these games. So I don't know. I think this is going to be one of the more exciting postseasons that we've ever had, or at least towards the end of the year when it really comes down to who's going to be making the playoffs and who's not. So, with that said, you look at that Oregon-Washington game. Awesome. I mean, that was just an all-out battle. And those are two teams beginning of the year that no one really thought much about in the sense of, yes, they're going to be good, solid teams, but.
But you dismissed the Pac-12.
What's that?
You dismissed the Pac-12.
Yeah.
That's just what you do. Like.
Yeah. Well, you don't think of them as they may be really good, but they're not top five. Right.
Yeah.
Like, at least until they prove you otherwise, they're just not there yet.
Yeah.
In reality, I think either one of those teams could come up and beat any one of the top five teams on any given night, right?
I think Washington's the best team in the country right now.
They could be.
I think all the evidence we have, they have, one of the three best wins in the country. They've been dominant outside of that.
Tell me they don't remind you of TCU from last year.
No, they don't. They're way better than that.
You think?
Yeah, TCU was winning games by accident for much of last year. TCU is like 2012 Notre Dame, where they were closer to going 3-9 than going 12-0. This Washington team has looked dominant, and it took a top 10 opponent that with like a sixth year quarterback that we think is really good, to come in and test them for the first time all year. No, I don't think Washington is like TCU. I think TCU ended up where they were effectively by accident as compared to this Washington team. I think this Washington team reminds me of the good Oregon teams, the one that played Auburn in the national championship, the one that beat the hell out of Florida State in the college football playoff. I think they remind me of, honestly, some of the Ohio State teams. Like, their top two receivers are ridiculous. Michael Penix is a phenomenal quarterback. I think we can ask questions about their defense. Oregon's a good offense. You give up whatever it was, 33 to Oregon. Yeah. What would you do if you came up against, Ohio State clicking on all cylinders and those guys? Like, who knows? But we'll get a bit of a sense of that when they face USC, probably, depending on how the game in the trenches plays out. I think like it's hard to argue that there are two or three better teams than Washington. And we absolutely were not saying that, I don't think, at any point about TCU last year.
Except for Rutgers.
Yeah, I mean, look, hey, for a few hours on Saturday, Rutgers and Notre Dame had the same record.
Hey, did you guys miss the big Rutgers comeback? Down 24-6 awesome. In the fourth quarter and win 27-24?
Rutgers is going to go into Bloomington, Indiana mm-hmm. on the 21st. Mm-hmm. They're going to smack the Hoosiers, and they're going to cement bowl eligibility. Yep. 10 Rutgers is a legitimate technical possibility right now.
I don't get the CW.
Doesn't matter. Big Ten doesn't play on the CW.
Oh, sorry. I thought that was like a joke across all.
No, and only institutions that are bad. Yeah.
I mean, they were a little bit lucky when they got the Michigan State punter just muffed the snap and they fell on it in the end zone for a touchdown. Then for some reason, the kickoff after they scored, Michigan decided not to play the ball or forgot that they have to play a kickoff, and Rutgers just grabbed the ball. it was a crazy final, like that 6 minute window where they scored. It was crazy, but it was fun to see. I mean, it was a rainy day.
All these wins for Rutgers are massive, right? Like every one of them's like one more tick in the column for recruiting, being like, hey, not only are we in this division, we're beating these teams, or we're hanging tough. Like it's not like we're not a stepping stone. We're not a flyby team anymore. Like it's awesome.
Yeah. The problem with Saturday, like you have this great comeback at the end of the game, exciting finish, but it was just pouring. So there was nobody at the game.
And, you know,
the stands were maybe half full. By the time you get to the end of the game, it's only like 25%. So that was a bummer.
Glenn, do you mean to tell us that for much of the fourth quarter, Michigan State played like a team without a coach?
It's their own doing. They were just so intimidated by what they had seen the first three quarters, and they couldn't believe that they had beaten back that level of football. And then they eventually they just run out of luck.
They got out over their skis a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Classic.
But I love it. Well, to be honest, I think Notre Dame just absolutely looked like a brand new team, and right there you look at, all right, so is USC that bad, or are they, have they been exposed to saying, all right, well, they got a couple good weapons, but man, they go up against a better competitive team, and they just can't hang anymore. Or they just have a bad day. I mean, it's hard to tell sometimes with these college kids too, because it doesn't take much for them to start emotionally getting down and falling apart and whatever. But then they come back the next week and they're like a whole new team.
I mean, how does this Notre Dame team go to Louisville and get smacked and then beat a top 10 team by four scores? Like,
I mean, they made a kid who looked like he was coming. If he came into the NFL today, everyone was saying that he'd be like the top three quarterback in the NFL, almost to the point where I don't know if this is true or not, but they're saying that when he gets drafted, he's asking for a percentage of ownership of whatever team drafts him. Like as a, before he signs his rookie contract, he wants ownership.
Which apparently Aaron Rodgers asked for and did not get.
Yeah. Oh, crazy. And who knows if that's true or not, but like that's the caliber of player. And Notre Dame stuck it to him. I mean, they pressured him. They made him make bad decisions. They were all over. It was
and
great.
This was a guy who embarrassed them last year.
Yeah.
I mean, just completely ran all over them. He was impossible to bring down. He was extending plays and finding guys downfield. And, credit to Notre Dame defensive coordinator Al Golden. Obviously, Notre Dame had more weapons on defense in this game than they did in the same game last year, but their scheme was phenomenal. I think they knew they had the better line. They knew they'd be able to get pressure on Caleb Williams, and USC pretty clearly thought, hey, Notre Dame's going to try to pressure us, but we're going to do a lot of stuff along and behind the line of scrimmage, and we have better athletes on the outside than they do. And either they were wrong about that or Notre Dame had it schemed up perfectly, because all of their screen passes and reverses and ends around and all of that, like, those did not work. And Caleb Williams had the worst game of his college career. I think he came into the game with 6 interceptions in his college career, and he threw 3 in the first half. So that was pretty sweet. It was the fewest yards per play of any Lincoln Riley coached offense ever, in his tenure as a head coach, at least. So that was great. I mean, you could tell USC had some dudes, though. You know, Zachariah Branch, who's this freshman wide receiver, kick returner, you know, he had a big punt return that kind of brought USC back into the game. Their guys on the outside, whether it's Jerry Rice's kid or Mario Williams, Michael Jackson, any of those guys, like, they're legit. Their running game's impressive. They run the option really well, but I think they can get bossed around. I think their offensive line can get bossed around. And, like, a lot's been made about their defense. You know, there's this talk about, like, they don't tackle and that's a culture thing or whatever it might be. Their pass rush is supposedly very good. They didn't have a sack against Notre Dame, but, like, they win in pass rush a lot. I was not impressed with their secondary. Notre Dame didn't really try to stretch them all that much, but they hit the only big play they attempted. And, like, it was just like, I don't know. Like, Notre Dame's receivers are nothing to write home about. And USC has, you know, these 4- and 5-star guys at corner and safety, and they were not impressive. So I don't know. Like, when you have that level of talent, especially that talented a quarterback, we've seen it with Cam Newton, we've seen it with Lamar Jackson. Like, you've seen it with Caleb Williams last year. You can take a flawed team a long way. I don't know that Notre Dame, like, exposed the formula for beating USC, but and I also don't know, like, how many people thought, oh, this USC team is going to go 15-0 before this year. Like, I think a lot of people thought they were dropping games somewhere. Yeah.
But it is impressive to see Notre Dame bounce back from a game they probably should have won to all of a sudden going to USC, who's on a hot streak.
Yep.
And just absolutely wiping the floor with it. It wasn't even close.
I mean, and let me tell you, we talked last year after I came back from the Notre Dame Clemson game about the atmosphere in Notre Dame Stadium and how good it felt to beat that team and all that stuff. This is the first time I had attended a Notre Dame USC game since 2017, in which Notre Dame, of course, beat a Sam Darnold quarterback team 49-14. There's nothing like beating USC. I've been in that stadium for wins over Texas and Clemson and Michigan and Stanford and, you know, every rival and big program that has shown up there. You know, I was there for the game against Georgia, which it looked like Notre Dame was going to win for a significant period of it. There is nothing like beating USC. Like, as cordial as Notre Dame fans endeavor to be with opposing fans, there is no result on the field that is more satisfying than just beating the hell out of USC. And it was great to be in that stadium. It was electric. They pulled out all the stops. Light shows, fireworks, all kinds of stuff. And it was, yeah, about as good as an environment as I've ever been in South Bend. And the game lived up to it. It was terrific.
If you're not a student, is there a place to go celebrate after in South Bend? Was there like people out on the street celebrating?
We don't have like a Toomer's Corner, so to speak. But, you know, the Linebacker, which is the bar across the street from campus that's kind of legendary, is a popular spot for revelry after such a win, certainly.
All right, so as we transition into the NFL, I'm going to ask you a question since you're the data guy.
Okay.
If halfway through the season right now, rank your top 5, and I'm saying this as a Giants guy who's probably looking for potential drafting a quarterback. Name your top 5, number 1 being the number 1 draft pick, top 5 quarterbacks coming out of college this year.
Oh man, see, this is it's so and assuming hard.
Deion's kid's coming out. Just assume that for
okay.
this scenario.
It's hard, particularly, and I said this a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Sam Hartman. It's hard because I know that NFL teams see age differently than like someone who's just watching college football players succeed. So like I would tell you that Michael Penix has been the best quarterback in college football this year. But Michael Penix is like 23 or 24 years old. Whereas Drake May is like 20 or 21 years old. So I know that people kind of evaluate that in a certain way.
By the way, I didn't realize Drake May was 6'5".
Drake May is prototypical
Josh Allen big.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how much of a prioritization I have of these guys, but I think the five guys you would have your eyes on are Sanders, Penix, Drake May, Caleb Williams, and honestly, probably Jaden Daniels at LSU. He is throwing for a ton of yards. He might lead the country or the Power Five, or he's, you know, at the top of the Power Five, close to it in completion percentage. He is an incredible running threat. Like I think people are sleeping on Jaden Daniels, but yeah, I think it's him, Penix, Drake May, Caleb Williams.
Who's a Florida State kid?
Jordan Travis.
Travis. He's probably,
I mean, you look like around 6 or 7, Jordan, right? Travis is an interesting guy. Bo Nix is an interesting guy. JJ McCarthy is an interesting guy. Dylan Gabriel from OU is an interesting guy. I think, you know, it could potentially be a pretty deep class, but balancing like what you see on the field with what kind of weapons these guys have, what kind of defenses they're going up against, and how it seems like teams will actually evaluate them. I think like Penix has been good enough that age doesn't matter. I think Williams and Drake May are kind of no-brainers from the perspective of like they've been so good, they're young. It's almost like the Anthony Richardson argument, like they're just so toolsy that no matter how refined or unrefined they are, you go for them. And then like Shedeur Sanders behind a competent offensive line would probably be the best quarterback in college football. Like I'd be surprised if that's not true.
They could use another year though.
And it seems like he might take one, but
yeah, I don't think his dad
needs to grow up a little bit.
He probably needs to grow up a little bit, but Jaden Daniels is the guy I think people are sleeping on. I think Jaden Daniels is a really, really good player.
What do you think though is going to, I think the way you're going to rank quarterbacks now, just to look like what happened to Anthony Richardson, he's out for a year, right? So it's like, you got to start looking at these guys as what's more important now. It's like, it's almost, you know, we want them to be able to run, but I think you almost need a pocket passer and you need size now. I think you can't – so many players are going down.
But you need a guy
– huge factor in the QB position.
Yeah, I agree. But I think you need a guy that can move the pocket more than anything else. Like what Josh Allen does so well is he doesn't necessarily take off anymore like he used to. He can if he needs to, but he can move the pocket around, where some of the guys that aren't as successful anymore – stand there, you know, like Eli was suffering his last couple of years as a quarterback because he just was so immobile. And, you know, they would lick their chops, like these fast defensive ends, saying, well, we know he's not going anywhere. So if they couldn't block him for more than 7 seconds, you know, Eli was going to get sacked. So either got to get the ball out super fast and have that trigger, or you got to at least be able to move the pocket around or flow with the offensive line and create space. Which I think some of these guys can do. I think that's what, you know, the guys like Drake May and even Caleb Williams, like he's a great runner, but I don't think they're looking at him as a running quarterback per se. He can just throw the ball from any angle.
He
can escape and he can get the ball out.
And that's what I think Daniel Jones' biggest hiccup right now is the fact that he holds the ball so long. He makes poor decisions and he holds the ball like 1 or 2 seconds too long. Mm-hmm. And he's just, you know, you look at, you know, all these other quarterbacks are just making these quick decisions, and it's not that their offensive lines are that much better than the Giants. The Giants' offensive line sucks. I get it. But, you know, at the end of the day, if that's not going to work because your offensive line is not magically going to get healthy overnight, or they're not going to get magically better overnight, well, then figure something else out. Get the ball out quicker, move around a little bit more, figure out something else. You can't just sit back there and hope that something's magically going to change, you know? So I think some of these other quarterbacks are just, I think what teams are looking for is like, all right, quick decision, move around in the pocket, make, create space for yourself and create plays out of that. Like, that's what makes these guys so special. And even Daniel Jones, you know, he is a great mobile quarterback, but again, he keeps getting hurt because he's forced to run so much, you know, and it sucks to see that. You know, last year we got really lucky. And of course, it's a contract year, but he had, you know, 700 something yards rushing and looked like Michael Vick out there sometimes. But he just, that's not really what you want either. You know, that's a surefire way to get your guy injured.
Yeah, I think that's what Josh Allen's running, like, I think almost half as, you know, like, I think he's running like 22 times at this point, as like last year was like 37.
Yeah.
I think they're getting smart because these guys, you can't, you know, it's a one position league. You lose your quarterback, you don't have any chance. So they got to do, I think they're being smart about protecting these guys. Even Mahomes, I don't see Mahomes taking off running as much as he used to. Just, you know, you hate to see these guys come out and they spend so much money and they're so important to the team and see these guys go down like Richardson and you know, Daniel Jones, you know, it's just a weird hit. You know, he has that history of the neck injury. It's just such a crazy position that I think teams are going to start looking at size at quarterback more than anything else. Durability.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. Josh Allen, this is crazy. Josh Allen finished last season second on the Bills in carries with 124 behind Devin Singletary's 177. So that's a difference of 52 over the entire season. He is already 53 carries behind James Cook this year, and he is fourth on the team in carries. So it does sound like there's a concerted choice there to have Josh protect himself a little bit more.
Yeah, he is healthy going into the playoffs. Like, you know, last year, there were a lot of design plays on like the Bills 40, and it's like, why there? I understand the red zone. I understand on third down. But in second and six on your own 40, there's no reason to put your quarterback in that position of getting hurt.
He also doesn't slide. He looks to hurdle people and looks to like make contact and stiff arm people. Like, what are you doing?
Well, that's you want to talk about college quarterbacks, the Jaden Daniels from LSU. There is one highlight per game of him getting absolutely just crushed.
Yeah.
Like it's like one of those guys who will like get up and say some nonsense, like the human body craves contact. It's like, no, dude, like you just don't know how to run out of bounds.
Yeah. We have one of those kids on our team that I coach on the Bulldog. He literally he had 30 yards wide open. He beat everybody else. And there's one kid playing safety, almost shaking in his boots because this kid's a pretty violent runner. Kid wanted nothing to do with him. And it was like blood in the water. Like he all of a sudden he started to veer towards him. We're like, what are you doing? Like, go right. You're going to score. And he just nipped this kid out and ran towards him and plowed into him. And anyway, he loved it because there's a video of him now like stiff arming his opponent and like knocking him over and de-cleated him. But he didn't score either. The kid tackled him. So like, what are you doing, you knucklehead?
That's awesome.
People just love the contact.
That's awesome. That's Kyren Williams, who had 158 yards and a touchdown against the Cardinals for the Rams last game, and unfortunately has been placed on IR today, was like that as a runner. Like, he'd have a clear path into the end zone, just decide to blow someone up, which is really entertaining, but can't be good for you. Do you guys want to talk at all about the game that went on between your teams? Maybe... Look. How the ending of it is something that everyone agrees about and was obviously correctly officiated and nobody has anything to say about it. Do you guys want to discuss it all?
99.9% of the time, the Bills would win that game, hands down. They're the better team. I give them that. I didn't think the Giants would have a shot at any point. It's just whatever. Giants shouldn't have been in that game. The Giants defense came to play. for me, which was the one thing that we've been missing all year, in the sense of we've been missing a lot of things, but like we haven't shown any heart this year. Like we've been losing in like a really crummy fashion where it's just, I feel like, you know, the team just has been disorganized. They just haven't, you know, at halftime looks like they don't want to be there. They look like they're down in the dumps. It's just, it's so frustrating where you thought they were going to be this tough and gritty team and they just haven't been. This was the first time the defense came out and they just were walloping the Bills. They were blitzing, you know, our middle linebackers were flying around, batting down passes, tackling, making, you know, great tackles on the running back. We were doing everything we needed to do, everything. We get down to the 1.5-yard line at halftime with 14 seconds left and screw that up with no points. Dumb. And you're like, oh, God, we're so bad. Like, our coaching and our communication right now is so bad. Something's got to change. All right. Well, it won't happen again. So we get down to the very end of the game again, wide right on the field goal kick. Greatest thing that I thought was the funniest thing that's happened in a long, long time. Because it was almost identical yardages from Norwood's notorious wide right from the Super Bowl. So I had the text ready to go.
Too soon.
And I don't send it because I'm like, we're still down, but we're going to have the ball in great position. They march down. They call the pass interference like they should have the first time. And they get down to the fact, you know, to do it again. And it's not a bad play, whatever. I love that all the people that were saying that they shouldn't have run the first time, they should have run Saquon the second time. It's just shut up. So it's not a bad play. That's what you got Waller there for. But the guy clearly, as soon as he left the line, he grabbed Waller's jersey and he grabs Waller's arm and he doesn't let go for the whole duration of the play. And it's right in front of the refs, and it's almost like the guy's halfway to his car because he wants to beat traffic, doesn't throw the flag, doesn't do whatever. The NFL is almost becoming that league where it's like, there's the haves and there have-nots, right? And the Giants are obviously the have-nots right now. The Bills deserve to win that game because they are the haves. They want to see Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and that thing. Like, and it wasn't just that play. It was the – and, Glenn, you got to agree with me on this one too. It was third and long. We sacked Mahomes. We sacked Josh Allen. And it was Bobby Aquario. Sorry, I'm saying his name wrong. He hits the shoulder pad and he hits him in the chest, nowhere near the head, and takes him down. Mm-hmm. And total, as clean as sack could possibly be. And they called roughing the passer. First down, 15 yards, keeps the drive alive, and that's the one they scored on. They take Josh Allen, they put him in the tent for a play to make him sure he's okay. The whole thing is like it's a staged
theater.
Mm-hmm. You're like, what are you doing? Like this, like I get it. You want him to win. Like it's so poorly, you know. I don't know. You can almost read when they joke about it being scripted. Like this is why they're slowly turning into the NBA. Where you see Daniel Jones literally get his head ripped off, get sacked 15 times. Half of them are shots to the head and whatever. They don't call one on them, you know. And it's just crazy. The league is becoming tough to watch sometimes.
Yeah. They really need to define roughing the passer, pass interference, and what is a catch. And these are three integral. These are the game-deciding plays. Clear pass interference on the last play. But – You got to experience what I did as a Bills fan for 3 years of Tyrod Taylor's quarterback, where he just can't get it done. Like at that ball, even though Johnson's like yanking on Waller's jersey, a 5-yard pass, and he threw it way high. If he just throws it down, it's an easy catch for Waller, even getting his jersey yanked. But this guy, I mean, by all accounts, a nice guy, but oh my God, this guy is just not a very good football player. And that calling to run, audibling at the end of that half, is like, what are you doing?
It's funny. I'm a little league football coach, right? And I coach the defense. And when they get down with 14 seconds, I said, don't worry, Jack. They're going to have 3 shots at this because they'll throw it 3 times. And then if they don't make it, they'll kick a field goal. Like, we'll walk away with 3 points unless they turn it over. I said, the only thing they can't do is run it. First play off the bat, they run it, and he's like, "Well, that's okay. They'll get back in time." I was like, "No, it's over because they won't get back." Like everybody knows that. It's like it's like coaching 101.
Yeah.
If you're under 16 seconds, you can't run the ball. You just don't have enough time. And like Tyrod Taylor should know that. And like, so, but Dable's got to be very clear with him. Like they have him in the headset. Like there should be no chance to audible that. There should be crystal clear. Like, hey, we know you're the backup. And even though you've been in the league for 52 years, you should know better. Like, I don't know. It's just, so I'm pissed that the, part of me is funny because I really want the Giants to now tank because they're going to, they suck. And I want a new, I want some new draft picks. But I did want to win that game at the end. It would just, it would have been nice just to, because I was like, man, they finally feel like they, this would be a nice gritty win. But I'd rather the Bills go further than, I'm so sick of Kansas City. Yeah. So help me God, if the Bills don't beat Kansas City this year, Glenn, I may let your hair.
Someone up. Has to.
Well, I would, if Daniel Jones won that game, beat the Bills, I wouldn't have been, I would have been fine with that. But I think Don and I might have both jumped off a bridge in 95. We got beat by Tyrod Taylor. All the years of suffering through that guy. Because, you know, 12 for 17, 105, no touchdowns, two picks. It's like, oh, God. I was like, no, we can't lose to Tyrod Taylor. Anything.
You know, he looks so mobile, but, man, he is not.
No.
He's like – he like he's got like quick twitch moves like to get in and out of like the pocket, but then halftime you see space and you're like, all right, run, just get the first down, and then he trips over his own 2 feet. And you're like, what just happened? Like, what? Who touched you? Like, I don't even know what happened there.
Glenn, can you please rank Trent Edwards, Tyrod Taylor, J.P. Lossman, and E.J. Manuel?
Oh my God! Well, Trent Edwards was the best until he shot. He signed the big contract, and then he had the curse of the big contract. They were what? I think they were 4-5-0 with him, and then he got a concussion, never came back. I don't know if he even played after that. He might have come back. And J.P. Lossman, oh, my God. Dude, get rid of the ball. Holy mackerel. Even in practice, they would have him drop back, and after 3 seconds, they'd, a big air horn would go off. Like, dude, at some point, you're a quarterback. You have to throw it.
That's awesome.
E.J. Manuel, I remember in London, I think it was against the Jags. Throwing like back to back or three picks in a row on three consecutive passes. And then Tyrod, likable guy, just not a good quarterback.
It's crazy to me that he's even the highest paid backup quarterback. I'd rather have Gardner Minshew.
Yeah.
Or some, like some of those guys that are just absolute gamers. Like,
yeah.
I would take Gardner Minshew over, I don't know, that, there's probably four or five starters in the NFL right now that I'd be like, I'd take Minshew over him just because he just looks like he's ready to play at all costs. You know, he'll blow it at some point, but who cares? Like he's just,
but he's also going to give you a 300-yard game. I think Tyrod Taylor, you can only remember one 300-yard game for Tyrod Taylor, and it went into overtime. Yeah, you get him over the 300 yards.
The guy, Craig, your favorite quarterbacks are like Mike White, Gardner Minshew, Taylor Heineke, Cooper Rush, like those are your dudes.
Nate Peterman.
Oh, I should have put Nate Peterman on the list. You're going to talk about EJ Manuel throwing interceptions. Nate Peterman was the interception
king. Five against the Chargers. They benched Tyrod Taylor. They put Peterman in and he throws five picks in the first quarter against the Chargers.
Yeah, man. Nate Peterman, not very good at professional football.
So I keep repeating myself. It's a one position league, and man, you can go through a list of quarterbacks that just had a chance to play and just they're just not good.
But it is amazing to see though how Tyrod Taylor was with it, an even more inept offensive line because we lost two other players. We're now picked up Justin Pugh off of the practice squad of the car. Actually, was sitting at home. He wasn't even on.
Yeah, he said straight off the couch.
Straight off the couch.
Yeah,
I mean, and he was our best offensive lineman by far. Wasn't even close.
By the way, that backup offensive line was the best of the year by far. Even better than last year. I'd stay with those guys.
Tyrod Taylor still figured out how to move the ball a little bit. Like, you know, and they couldn't quite get in the end zone, but still, like Dan Jones, you're getting $47 million this year. I'm sorry, like I love you, dude, but you're going to get criticized. Throw the freaking ball. Like, get in the end zone. Stop looking like a deer in headlights like you've never seen these plays before because it's getting old, bro. Like, it's just that's a lot of money. If you're still on a rookie contract, maybe you get away with that. You can't do that anymore.
All right, Craig, before we get your blood pressure to a dangerous level here, we're going to start to wrap things up. what should people know about what One Club Short is up to over the, I'm not even calling it the off season yet. The weather's been good on the East Coast. I know it was a little rough today, but there's still golf to be played. What should people know about what One Club Short's up to?
Well, we got a lot of stuff we're working on right now. There's we're working on the schedule for next year. So hopefully in the next couple months, we'll have that ironed out. And it's really just going through the schedule of where, when, you know, we're trying to hit some new locations. So that's always a little bit complicated. But and we're trying to throw in some different formats and hopefully have some interesting twist for next year. So that'll be fun, but we can't do any of those announcements for a little while, but that's all stuff we're working on next year. But more than anything else, check us out on Instagram. And submit your hole of the week. Kyle, you can either submit with a voiceover or Kyle is happy to do it for you. We would love to start, you know, getting our community of golfers out there and seeing different golf courses, seeing different swings. We got some great merch that's still available and we'll be going on sale too once we get closer to the holidays. But right now, we still got some cool stuff. That's especially the sweatshirts and stuff. It's really hitting that type of season.
Merch is so cool. Check out the merch. Just do it.
So all that stuff's on Instagram, which take it to our Shopify account, and then in the podcast. Other than that, we're just hanging and playing. So,
love it, Glenn. Any parting words from you before we wrap this up?
No, I think my Buffalo Bills offense to get their act together. They haven't looked great in the last 2 weeks, so get together, boys.
There you go. With that, we can get stuff wrapped up. As Craig said, you can follow us on Instagram where we're at One Club Short. You can follow us on Twitter where you're at One Club Short and then the number one. Everything we're up to is always also at oneclubshort.com. Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. You'll get video if you're listening on Spotify, and the whole video episode goes up on YouTube as well. We'll be back here, similar time, similar place in a couple weeks to do this again. And until then, thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks, everybody.